This thing's on.
Okay, cool. Okay.
All right.
All right. So we're going to play Finish It. Finish It, the outrageous
storytelling game.
Storytelling party game.
Whatever, dude. I've heard you say it like 1,000 times.
Finish It, the outrageous storytelling party game. Okay, so here's how it's going. Everybody has a hand of 3 cards. These are item cards, right? And each item card actually has 2 things on it. Meanwhile, we have kids in the background playing with wonderful toys.
Baby disco.
Yeah, baby disco. Each item card has 2 items, an item number, or item A and item B, right? So either side. So basically you have 6 different items in your hand. All right. So at the start of a round, whoever is the leader for that round, we'll call him the storyteller, is going to actually set down his or her item cards and is going to draw 1 setting, 1 hazard, and 1 condition, okay? And then, and I'll be the storyteller for the first round, just so you guys get the hang of it. And I will basically tell the first half of a story, okay? I will tell the first half of the story that is set in this given setting that incorporates a specific condition and presents some kind of a hazard. And then you guys, after you hear the setup, so I will give the setup, and then I will choose item A, item B. I will say first one A, second one B, first one B, second one A, or I might say whatever you guys want, and that'll make sense in a second here. And then what you have to do, after you hear my setup for the first half of the story, you then choose 1 item from your hand that you're going to keep to use in your half of your resolution of the story, and 1 to the pass to the player on your left. Okay? So if I say A, then you're going to have to pick 1 item A from your hand to keep and 1 to pass. The 3rd card in your hand, you're just going to set aside. You can keep that for the next round. All right? And then we go around the table and we take turns finishing the story. We have to finish it. Hence the name of the game. So I would tell the first half, then Steph would tell the second half of the story, basically saying how she resolves this hazard. That's kind of the goal, is to resolve the hazardous situation, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that. Okay? So she would tell her version of the story. Then it would be Jason's turn. Jason would tell his version of the story. Then Will would tell his version. Ro would tell her version. And so after everyone has told their version of the second half of the story, then I, as a storyteller, pick who I think either was the funniest, or best resolved the hazard, or is the best use of item cards, whatever, or maybe the combination of all those things, whatever I think is the best. Usually there's a standout every round to be the winner. That winner takes the hazard card as the as a point for that round, and basically play once around the table, so everyone has been a storyteller. So we can do that, we can play first to 3 points, or we can play until we get tired of it.
At least do like a round, so everyone's the storyteller once.
Yeah, generally that's what you do, yeah. And it's not really about winning, it's about playing.
Okay.
So. You have to ask, how do you win this game? Then it's not a good storytelling game.
It's not really about that. Okay? Fair enough?
All right.
So I will draw 1 of each, a setting, a hazard, and a condition. And let me see what I got here. Okay. Oh, these are good ones. Okay.
They usually are.
Yeah. So, I am a businessman. I'm a businessman who's gotten into some trouble. I live in Brazil, okay? And you know, business in Brazil has a lot of issues. There's a lot of crime, right, in Brazil.
I'm kidding.
So I got mixed up with the wrong crowd, and they decided that I owed them some money. And that they were tired of trying to collect on that. So the first thing they did is they had to catch me. And I knew they were coming for me, so I was on the run. But they had to catch me, and so and I was running as I'm a fast runner. I don't know if you guys knew that. I'm a fast runner. But basically the only way they could catch me was by running me down with their car, which put me in a full body cast. And that's my first condition. So they ran me down with the car. There were cops around, and so they couldn't get me at that point. So the cops picked me up and sent me to the hospital and put me in a full body cast to the hospital because it broke a bunch of bones. But then after I was in the hospital, the mob, the bad guys came back and abducted me from the mob and took me out into the jungle. That's my setting, is the jungle. And then they dug a big hole in the ground and they buried me alive in the full body cast in the jungle. And now I need to figure out how to escape, how to get out of this while in a full body cast. And that is your setup for the first half of the story. And I'm going to say item A. So from your hand, you have to pick one item A that you're going to keep and one that you're going to pass to the player on your left.
So that means that on our turn now, we have to use the item A we kept and the item A someone gave us.
Right. Right. Well, that one goes to Steph.
Oh, so, okay.
Because I was the storyteller this time.
So when do we draw from this then?
At the end of the round. You draw back at
three.
Oh,
I see. You always have three.
Yeah, back at the at the end of the round. So, Steph, if you're ready...
So basically, the idea is you want to explain how you got out of being buried alive while wearing a full body cast using the two items you have.
Stuck in the jungle. Buried
or the
alive
two items have to be in your story.
Yeah.
They don't always help you.
Okay. So, the mobsters that you were in bed with, see, they were all into this, like, you know, they were drug lords, right? So, one of the things that they used to manufacture the drugs were kids' chemistry sets.
Wow.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So, when they threw you in the hole, they didn't realize that they accidentally left one of these sets behind. And you saw that. But and what they didn't know is that when you, when they took you from the hospital, you had swiped a yardstick with your toes, because that was one thing that, that was still free from the body cast was your toes. So you have this yardstick with your toes, and you're able to pull the chemistry set over to your hand, your one hand that's free, and you create an explosion just enough to break you free from the body cast using the chemistry set so that you can then... crawl away, because you know you're still pretty broken up because you're in a full body cast, right? So you use the yardstick with your toes to get the chemistry set to your one good hand that you can then manipulate a tiny explosion that fractures the full body cast, and you crawl away to safety.
Okay. Pretty good.
That was good. All right, so... I'm in this jungle in the woods and buried and whatever, and I'm just as I'm laying there, I'm so confused because first of all, I keep hearing this sound, this meow, meow. I'm like, well, I'm in the jungle. It's probably a tiger.
That sounds like a tiger.
Well, I mean, I'm under the ground, right?
Yeah.
So you know, they left a little space though. So like every time I hear this meow. I noticed that it's just like the dirt is just falling right at my face. Just falling right at my face. And it feels so real with the dirt falling in my face because I'm buried alive in the body cast. But I'm just really not sure what to do. So I start yelling at this tiger, "Go away, tiger! Go away, tiger!" And then all of a sudden, I see that the tiger is, I can hear it's digging. It's digging, trying to get down to me. And I'm thinking, well, hey, maybe the tiger will free me.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it might also eat me. So I'm just, but I hear this tiger digging, and then finally I see the tiger pop its head through, and it's like its head is just flying right at my face, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do. But as it gets closer, I realize that it gets closer, it's like licking my face. And as it licks my face, I think, oh, this tiger's smaller than I thought.
Uh-huh.
But as it's licking my face, something else happens. It dislodges something that was on my face, and that was red blue 3D glasses.
Oh.
I realized that I'm not actually buried alive. There's just a picture above me of dirt, but it looks like it's in my face because of these 3D glasses. And it's actually a fluffy kitten. It's licking my face.
Because I was wondering how a tiger ended up in Brazil.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It would have been like a panther or a puma. But so, anyways, so I realized I'm not actually in danger. I'm actually just, they buried me under fake dirt.
That's
just a picture. Once I realized that, I'm able to just shimmy myself away. Yeah, so.
I'm just psychologically buried.
Yes, basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
All right, Will, your turn.
All right, well, you know, you are in Brazil.
Yeah.
And you're kind of jerks there.
You sure are.
So, in order to...
Brazilians, am I right?
So... So, in order to let you scratch yourself in areas that you can't reach, you know, usually you would use like a coat hanger or whatever.
Right.
Because you're in a full body cast, they give you a box of toothpicks.
Mm.
But you were so fast. And this is all because you've been working out with 3-pound hand weights. So you were able to like hulk out with your wrist, take your box of toothpicks, and then scratch your way to the surface. And then once you were to the surface, you know, you were only a yell away from, you know, from the resort that you were buried next to,
sure.
where everybody was paying for unlimited alcohol, and then right. they just weekend with Bernice with you.
Yeah, of course, that makes total sense. All right.
Okay. So these mobsters, or whoever that you are dealing with, actually deal in bootleg movies, DVDs. So you kind of get caught up because you're like the American, like, drug mule. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the contact to bring all these bootlegs over. But you like... What? You don't want to know. you were supposed to get a shipment of them to bring back with you. But then you realized it's just a bunch of empty DVD cases. So you got into this huge fight with them because, you know, you thought they were swindling you or whatever. So anyway... The full body cast is actually made up of all these empty DVD cases that they buried you in that, but they didn't realize that you had like a shell necklace on, uh-huh. so you're able to kind of rip it off and like tap out this Morse code on the DVD cases,
oh.
and you were buried very deep, so people could hear you,
wow.
and they, like, this remote jungle tribe was like, huh, that sounds like one of our codes. Even though you didn't know what you were doing, but they, like, recognized it because of the sound of the shells. So they, like, found you and made uh-huh. you part of the tribe. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Out there.
Now I'm part of the tribe.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
It is.
Shell yeah. All right. Okay, so I have to pick the winner. I think Jason kind of copped out by saying that I wasn't actually buried alive.
I had to use the 3D glasses.
Yeah, so that's tough. I respect Morse code very much. That's or no, I'm sorry, tribal code. It wasn't Morse code, it was tribal code. Oh, that's good, but I want to say I like explosions, so I have to go with the kids' catch up set.
Well done.
Yes.
Very good. All right, and so just make a discard pile okay. for items and draw back.
Oh, wait, but then we keep the
we
one.
Keep the
one.
We keep the one.
So we draw two, basically.
Yeah,
time.
Right. And now,
oh,
it's,
now it's my
Steph's
turn.
Turn to draw a setting, hazard, and condition.
And then I come up with a story based on these items.
Right.
Oh, dear.
And if the items completely don't fit together, that's still okay. Because there are a couple of scenarios in there where you said
it's just
completely
bizarre.
Make no sense.
Let's just go with it. If I mean, if you really, really, really hate it, we can house rule and just say whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's a storytelling game.
Right. We can do a mulligan. That's fine.
Okay. You're a whore in a Wild West saloon.
Let's
I
just
love,
start out with that.
Yeah, I love the story. Start that way.
Drop a bomb right there. I think you just dropped the mic right there.
And you're high on the vapors.
I'm high on the vapors. All right.
And you're
only
not.
Ritzy people get the vapors. Other people do the vapors.
So in the saloon where you're high on the vapors, there's a lot of gambling, and you're in charge of the gambling ring.
Mm-hmm.
But you've gotten yourself in a little bit of trouble because you've racked up some debt yourself as part of this. And you're in trouble because your John Boris just called you about your $30,000 gambling debt. and he's riding in on the next stagecoach to collect. He sent you a telegraph, though, you know, because he can't really call you because
uh-huh.
we're in the Wild
right.
West.
Well, yeah.
So we'll just say that he sent a telegraph
right.
message about his debt and he's coming to collect on the next stagecoach.
Okay.
So you need to figure out. You don't have any money, you know. Business has been pretty good as a whore.
Yeah.
But you don't have $30,000 to pay back Boris. So you have to figure out what you're going to do when Boris arrives on the stagecoach and how you're going to pay back your debt.
Mm-hmm. Boris is your John.
Boris is your John.
Okay.
So, you know, it could be a potentially dangerous situation.
Sounds like it.
You know, in the Wild West.
I'm nervous.
Go. Right.
Which letter?
A or B. Oh, A or B. So you can pick.
You basically say to us, use A or B. So like last time Rob said, use A. So I had to use my A card, and then you gave me an A card too. So.
Or you have to use the A side.
Yeah, the A side.
Or, but you said you could also say, like, if you have to use A.
You could say A from your hand and B from your neighbor.
B from your hand, yeah. So you have to use A from your hand and you have to pass a B to your neighbor.
Okay.
All right.
A from our hand, B from the neighbor.
Yes. So is Jason?
Yep,
Jason
I'm first. All right, so here's what happens, right? I get the telegram late because. It'll be because of being high on the vapors. I don't know when that telegram comes in. So by the time I read the telegram, I realize Stagecoach is coming in right now. Mm-hmm. Totally hosed. What am I going to do? I happened to just finishing servicing a farmer. He was a sheep farmer.
Servicing.
Yeah, servicing. Yeah. He had some sheep shears with him.
Oh, that's good.
Which I thought was really interesting. So he mm-hmm. did. So I kept those. I was like, I'm going to take these as payments. Mm-hmm. Figured I'd defend myself with those. And then I took these, right? I took these sheep shears and I fashioned them. I broke them apart and I fashioned them into what looks like an axe. A tomahawk, if you will. Uh-huh. And then I happen to have these temporary tattoos laying around. And I put them on my face.
In the wild.
And made myself look like an engine. And then when Boris shows up, I just pretend to be a Native American lady, mm-hmm. And he doesn't know, so he asks where's the whore? So I don't know her name. So where's the whore?
Yeah.
And he can't find me, and I'm just like how? I guess as it would be
right. Yeah.
When he turns his back, tomahawk to the back.
Ooh.
And then everybody thinks an Indian did it, and then I run away before they scalp me. End of story.
Okay. It's probably the most racist story I've heard in
it's
years.
The Wild West.
It's the Brazilians.
Sure.
Wow. It's the Brazilians.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know Boris is coming. And you're all high on the vapors.
Yeah.
So in order to hide from Boris, you take some stick-on googly eyes. And you put him on the whore next to you. And then you go down to the basement and you watch Boris through your periscope. Until he leaves. Because you're all like, whatevs. He'll never know. FML, I'm out.
Wow.
Googly eyes for the win.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm assuming Boris is, like, not from here. You know, it's a very kind of Russian name. So he doesn't know really about, like, American currency, especially in the Old West, where there's, like, a lot of digging for gold and stuff. Mm, mm. So, also, I'm high on the vapors. Mm-hmm. And I think Boris is stupid. So, brilliant idea. I take an egg separator, and I separate the yolks out, and I take a small packet of buttons that came with my shirt because I'm horrid and I don't need the buttons. You know, I don't need the buttons.
I'm horrid and I don't need the buttons.
So I like take the egg yolks and make the buttons yellow to make them look like gold. So when he comes, I just give him the buttons. And he doesn't even know.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
That's pretty good. He thinks it's worth $30,000. That's pretty good.
And a peep show. I got no buttons on my shirt.
Well, let me tell you. So Boris is on his way, and I have to look around my whore room, where I do my horn. And I've only got a few things in there. I do have this bag of gummy worms. And I know that when Boris comes in, he's gonna try and take his payment from me, right? So I open up this bag of gummy worms and I stick those gummy worms in places, you know. You know, and then and I'm high in the vapors, right? Which messes with your body chemistry. Oh. So I also have in my horror room a home pregnancy test. So what I do is I've got those gummy worms in places where they shouldn't be, and then I take the home pregnancy test, and because the vapors messed up my body chemistry, it shows as positive. And so Boris shortly thereafter storms into my horror room, and I say, "But Boris, look, I'm pregnant, and it's your baby." And he freaks out, and he gets mad, and then he tries to do some business and discovers that I also have a horrible infection with parasites. And he runs screaming from the room and forgets all about his $30,000 gambling debt.
Nice.
And then I never see Boris again because he wants to stay away.
Very nice.
And that's the most horrible thing I could ever imagine happening.
He doesn't think it's a Cthulhu baby.
I was thinking that too.
Wow. I wish I'd thought of that. I wish I had thought of that. That would have been a lot funnier. So there you go. That's how I got rid of Boris.
Interesting choices. I think I'm going to have to go with... This is tough.
Yeah, it is tough.
I think I'm going to have to go with the diseased worm.
All right, yay!
So I really appreciate that you were able to come up with that from small packet of buttons that came with your shirt.
All right.
Okay, now Steph's going to step out.
All right.
And we're going to play this with four of us for the rest of it. So, all right. So now it is Will's turn to spin a story for us.
Tell us a tale, sir.
Oh, yeah? No pressure. No pressure. I feel like I've been gypped by these cards, but that's all right. All right, so the setting is a ghost town once again.
Ooh. A ghost town like a haunted town or a ghost town like an Old West?
Like
abandoned town.
Like an abandoned town.
Okay.
Like the town next to Chernobyl.
Oh, okay.
So, and the condition is that everyone around you is speaking a foreign language that you don't understand. Because, well, you know, it could be Russian or it could be face-eating mutant. You don't know.
Well, okay.
I don't speak either of those languages, so yeah. That's good.
And the hazard is that you've just discovered you're working for the mafia. And a part of your job was to go in and get rid of all the face-eating mutants that you don't understand. But you need to clean the town up very much like... what's the name I'm thinking of? Resident Evil.
All right.
Okay.
So you're working for the Russian mob?
Not necessarily. It could be Umbrella. They're the same.
It's for the mafia, though. Right. It's a kind of mafia organization.
Yes.
Okay.
That you're trying to clean up the town.
Yes.
Of these aliens.
Face-eating zombies that you don't understand their foreign language.
All right.
Got it.
And what about our letters here?
Oh, you know, let me look at my letters and see what I have.
You don't get to use your
card. Well, I know, but, you know, it may make my decision easier. I'm going to go with B.
B.
Well played, sir.
All right. Okay, okay. And,
You're welcome.
Great.
Oh, man.
Tell me a tale, wordsmith.
Okay. Okay.
Weave us a web of words, you wordsmith.
So you're in this town with all these, what is it? Face-eating zombies?
Yeah, face-eating mutants.
Mutants, yep. Okay.
Speaking, facing mutant language.
You're cleaning the town up from these things, right?
Yes.
But you just can't, like, ask them to leave politely. You have to, like, get rid of them. Exterminate them, get to kill them. And you're part of the mafia, so that's, you should be able to do that, no problem, right? The thing is, even though the town, this ghost town, has a bunch of these alien mutants there, they're not just going to, like, look for you. They're going to hang out. They don't want to be killed. So you have to lure them out of where they are to you and draw them to you so you can get them in, you know, like the circumference of where you can actually kill them, right? So what you discover is that they have a hankering for buttered toast.
Oh!
And the scent of buttered toast just drives them to you. It's like a weird pheromone thing. You just, you know, you have buttered toast around you. You know they're going to come. So, in this ghost town, you know, it's abandoned. You, there's like, you know, the general store, there's like an old movie theater, there's an old bowling alley, there's an old saloon type bar or whatever. Anyway, in the bowling alley, you find a 13-pound bowling ball, and that is your weapon of choice. So when these mutants come to you, drawn by the buttered toast, you just like start swinging it around, and that's how you keep the town.
Nice.
So you just knock them on the head with the 13-pound.
Like I hold on to it and just windmill?
Yes.
Yes.
Why not?
You have to bring them in close so you can get them all. And you're whipping it around.
It's the circumference there.
Yes.
Killing circumference.
Right.
Well, let me tell you, she's way off. because the biggest challenge here, I think, clearly is communicating with the facing mutants. Because, I mean, we don't know what they want. We don't know what their hopes and desires. Well, obviously they want to eat faces, but I'm just saying, maybe they're not bad guys. Maybe they're not bad guys. So the first thing we need to overcome is figuring out that communication. As it turns out, the reason why you couldn't understand what they were saying is because when they talk, it just sounds like a fart, like a sound. And luckily, you had your whoopee cushion with you.
Nice.
So you have this device now, which can replicate the sounds, the guttural slapping sounds that they make from their mutant throats. And so you fill up that whoopee cushion. You can stick it in your armpit and just, you know, give it a good blast of the whoopee cushion. So now you have a way to communicate with them. But then you need some kind of a disguise so that when you approach them, they don't try and eat your face. You know? And it occurs to you that the faces of the facing mutants are also kind of messed up and like gooey and gloppy and stuff. And you also have a ripe avocado with you. You squish up and smear all over your own green face, right? And so now you look and sound like a face-eating mutant.
Nice.
Okay? Well, that was loud. Sorry. And then what you do, and of course you're working for the mob, and they told you if you can like Pied Piper this stuff here and get the face-eating mutants out of the town and into like this area where they have an ambush set up, then the mob will shoot them all, kill them all, bang, 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 right? And so basically you smear the avocado on your face so they don't recognize you or they see you as one of their own. And then you start whoopee cushion communicating with them so they hear their own sounds coming from you. And you basically manipulate the whoopee cushion to attract them out of the town over to where the mob has set up the ambush, and then they shoot them all and kill them. I mean, maybe they weren't out to hurt anybody. Maybe they're nice guys, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Right. We just cannot
not
have
suck
that.
Face.
We
eat face.
We cannot have them eating faces. It's unacceptable.
It's true. Well, you guys are both way off. Let me explain to you how this actually works. So you're really nervous about being in this town with these face-eating mutants until your phone rings and you get a call and it's from a mobster and he says, "Hey, you're working for me, right?" And you're like, "Oh, well, if I'm working for the mob, maybe I'm tough. If I'm tough. I can make a plan. I can get out of here. And you've got all this, just this bravado built up in you. Like, I'm going to take these guys out, right? So these face-eating mutants come up to you and they're like, you're like, hey, forget about it, right? You're like, sit and spin. And they look confused. You're like, no, really, sit and spin. And there's a sit and spin on the ground, right? So, like, you hop on the sit and spin, and you just start, boom, so you're just pumping the sit and spin. So you're spinning really fast. And you whip out your feather duster, and you just start tickling them. And their bodies are really unstable, right? So as you're tickling them, they're laughing. And they laugh so much, their heads explode. Nice. And that's how you just keep doing that. And they just keep coming. Exploding heads. Boom, heads. Done.
All right. All right. So I've heard your stories. Rob, I gotta say, I love your story. I don't believe that the mob won't think that I'm one of them. And just shoot me because, you know, because you can't have witnesses to the mob acts.
That's a fair
pretty
point.
Pretty huge flaw in your story.
That's a fair point, right.
Man, buttered toast and exploding heads. These are tough choices. I don't think I can windmill
a 13-pound bowling ball
long enough to, like, kill all the flesh or face-eating mutants.
You have to think about the Matrix. They did it there.
No, but
none of the Matrix to real life will.
I mean, I can make buttered toast all damn day.
Plus, how cool are you if you're like, sit and spin, and you're like, no, sit and spin.
But a sit and spin.
That's like James Bond, dude. James Bond would say something like that.
I've never puked on a sit and spin.
Oh, I have.
And no. So, yeah. You know, I'm going to have to give it to that because I totally own that.
All right.
I've been holding out of that sit and spin waiting for B to show up so that I can do that joke. I had to get the delta at the beginning. All right, so it's Ro's turn, last round of the game.
Okay. So, you're hiking in the woods. You drank something or you ate something that was not good for you. So, you know, while you're walking along, you're like, oh, shit. I have to shit. And you get, like, Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh.
So you start running because you're like, I need to find some place that's secluded and take care of business because it's coming, and it's not going to be good. It's going to be like blowing out your daughter's diaper. But as you're running, you're not really paying attention to your surroundings. You just know you need to get someplace that's a little bit more isolated and secluded where maybe people aren't going to find the little present you left behind for nature, right? But what happens is you fall into a sinkhole.
Oh, no.
And you just kind of keep falling and falling and falling. And you end up, there's like an underground river that you kind of fall into. And you're like, well, and I mean, you fall in and you're like startled and you like swim up to the top and you're like, well, this is kind of weird because, you know, you're below ground, right? And you still got to poop really bad. And you're like, shit, I don't want to just shit my pants in the river. What the weird thing is, even though it's an underground river, it's like an underground, like an underworld type river.
Ooh.
So you see kind of in the distance, like something coming toward you, and you're like, you realize it's a riverboat casino. And so you know you have to make it to this riverboat because you think there's probably going to be a bathroom there that I could probably use. And then try and find my way back. So you have to figure out how to take care of your shit problem, but then also get back to your friends.
Okay. All right. And letters?
Oh. Yeah, we'll go with whatever you guys want, and then you just tell the person you're giving a card to what they should go with.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Well... Oddly enough, I was hiking while wearing a business suit. I don't know why exactly. I mean, this is my first time hiking, so I wasn't sure what the proper attire was. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't know what kind of equipment to bring with me. You know, because you don't know what to do. So I climb out of the water and I shake all the water off of my suit. And I approach the Riverboat Casino, and as it comes past, I flag them down, and they're scratching their head because they're like, "Why on earth would we slow down for you?" And I pull this 3-ring biter out of my backpack, and I wave it at them authoritatively, you know, and they think obviously I'm a member of the gambling inspection people.
The commission?
The commission, yes, the gambling commission for the underground world. They just make that assumption, because why else would I be wearing a suit down here carrying
that
a binder?
That is true.
You know?
Why else would you?
Yeah.
I can't think of a reason.
So they pull over and they let me get on, and I make some declarative statements about gambling and needing to test their numbers, and there have been some complaints, let me tell you. And oddly enough, one of the people in charge is a beautiful woman. Just beautiful. And she's making eyes at me, and so I'll make some eyes back at her because actually, believe it or not, she's the fire marshal for the casino, for the Riverboat Casino. She's the fire marshal, which occurs to me, that means she's going to have access to a ladder. Mm. Mm-hmm. And she's making eyes at me, and I'm making eyes at her, but, you know, I need to really seal the deal. So I do my inspection, you know. I do my inspection of the casino, and turns out they pass the flying colors. I'm so pleased. And I ask them real quick, "Hey, guys, let me just... I forgot my briefcase in the other room." And what I really do is I pull out my empty heart-shaped box of chocolates, and I take a big crap in that. A great big crap, and I fill that up with my product. And I close that up, and I put a ribbon around it. And as I'm about to go, I say, "Oh, hey, sweetheart." And I go to this fire marshal, and I give her the heart-shaped box of chocolates, and I say, "You know, you're real special to me. I'd really love to see you sometime. Right now, though, I wonder if I could borrow your ladder." And because she's so dazzled, she lets me borrow her ladder. And then I jump off the Riverboat Casino, and I swim over to the edge, and I set the ladder so I can climb up out of the sinkhole and get back to my friends.
Very nice.
So that's how that works. It's pretty simple, really.
First off, everybody knows that in the center, journey to the center of the earth, it's lizard people that live underground. So when the Riverboat Casino picks you up, because of course it does, it's a bunch of lizard folk on board. And they're all like, "Wah, wah, wah."
What are they like?
"Wah."
Okay.
And your pants have fallen off at this point. And you're not sure how to communicate with them. And you just crap right there. Just all over the floor. Which is actually a sign of greeting for them, as it turns out. So they're like,
"That's lucky.
Oh, this guy is one of us, eh?" Right? So they're really excited and they're to see you. And they actually think that they saw you fall from the heavens, right? So they think you're this prophesized white dude that's supposed to come see them.
Mm-hmm.
So they take you in to have some brunch with them. And they feed you the most delicious sauerkraut you've ever tasted. It's just amazing, sauerkraut. And you're just like, "Wow, sauerkraut's so good, so good!" Then they after dinner they like to have some playtime. So they give you a slinky, and then they start to ask you some questions about their mythology, and you don't seem to be able to answer them. Because of course they speak perfect English.
I thought they were like, "How, how, how."
That was just their greeting, and then after that, they're all like, "Hey, old chap," you know. So it's really easy to understand them. Anyways, it turns out that they're talking about the sauerkraut, and they say, "Well, by the way, the sauerkraut is made from people we've taken from the top world."
Oh no!
And you're like, "Oh no! I'm a person from the top world," and they start to piece it together that maybe you're not the promised one. Maybe you're just a dude who fell down a sinkhole. But you're like, "Oh, I don't know what to do." So you quickly think You say, hold this slinky. And they do. And then you just run in circles around the whole group. And so they're all tangled up in this slinky.
Nice.
And then you just push them all into the water. And then you just set your riverboat on autopilot and you head forward. And I'm told from the people in the weird podcast that I listen to that there's actually an entrance to the center of the Earth somewhere near the North Pole. So as luck would have it, you pop out of there.
Hmm.
And then you start sailing back to wherever it was you came from. Presumably Mexico, since you had Montezuma's Revenge. And scene.
All right, you guys are both wrong.
Are we?
Probably.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a good chance.
So, you know, as Riverboat gets closer, you notice that everyone is done up just like David Bowie in the Labyrinth. And they're all super tall. So you whip out the sidewalk chalk that you have in your backpack to, you know, mark where you've been because you're a constant tagger and spray paint weighs a lot. But sidewalk chalk, man, that shit's light.
Yeah.
So once you do up your face to look like David Bowie, you put on some stilts. That, you know, you were using as walking sticks.
Okay.
And you hop up on the boat and everybody's just like, hey, bro, hey, hey. So then you walk around and you steal David Bowie's child.
Uh-oh.
You know, because he always has a baby in the Labyrinth.
Yeah.
He's holding it for hostage. But you still have to poop, so you replace it with your poo.
Ooh.
You do a poo baby?
Yes.
David Bowie's poo baby.
To leave a poo baby. So, but then you realize that the baby is also a key.
Oh.
So as you're walking, you learn that the baby's also a key.
A key? I thought you said a gi, and I was like, what's a gi?
No, you don't wear the baby.
Right.
You use the baby to escape. Uh-huh. So you walk off the boat with your stilts. After it's docked, you place the baby in its keyhole.
Oh, the literal key.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the upper world.
Okay.
Because that's the baby's chosen path. Uh-huh. You leave said baby behind, and then you stilt on home.
Stilt on home. All right.
Yeah, so there you go. So, poo baby.
That was pretty awesome, dude.
Poo baby.
That was pretty awesome.
I'm going to have to go with David Bowie, Poo Baby.
Yeah.
Because who doesn't like David Bowie and Poo Babies?
Poo Babies are pretty good. So that ends a full round of the game, and the winner, it appears, is Steph. Even though she sat out the last two games. So congratulations to Steph.
Yay!
So that's finish it. There you go, guys. Thanks for playing.
Thanks for listening, guys. Good night or something.
Something.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast.